This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the show?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the sun. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
And welcome back, everybody. Another edition here of the Auburn Undercover Podcast on the 24/7 Sports Network. My name is Nathan King, joined here by Christian Clemente and Jason Caldwell. And Christian, we'll get into, kind of wanted to do a sort of transfer portal preview show here because the madness is about to begin once again. It'll be a crazy time of year, like it always is whenever the portal opens up. We're recording this here on Sunday night, and the portal opens Tuesday at midnight. So it won't be on Monday that it'll be open, but first thing when you wake up on Tuesday, things should be rolling. So obviously we'll be keeping track of the movement on Auburn's side of things. We'll get into that here in just a minute, but Christian, I wanted you and Jason to kind of break down what's been going on recently in Auburn recruiting. There's been been some buzz recently. Got a very recent commitment there, and so I guess just kind of bring us up to speed on where they are right now with the 2025 class with some recent movement.
Yeah, week of highs and lows a little bit. Look, in recruiting, when you're in April, you never really want to get too high. You never really want to get too low. Before I get into that real quick, I just want to say that our prayers are with Amy White, Walker White's mom. She announced that she had breast cancer on Sunday. And, in recruiting, we have a special outlet to get to know the recruits and the families a little bit more than, maybe Nathan or beat writers necessarily do. And the White family has just been fantastic. So warm, so welcome every time we're around them, especially when we were in Arkansas. And Amy is incredible. Everyone knows that Walker is incredible. So our prayers are definitely with them and hoping the best for them as well. And I want to say that first, but getting into recruiting a little bit. Jason, we were down there in Williamson, there at the stadium with Cardae Smith shortly before he ended up committing to Auburn. Top 247 guy. The thing I wrote about him is every time we've seen him, he's been a different person. We saw him at camp last summer, and then we saw him at the Iron Bowl, and he had grown since then. Then from the Iron Bowl to his visit in the spring in March, maybe early April, whatever it was, again, he looked like a different person. He continues to grow. He continues to look just outstanding, just fantastic in terms of what you want as an offensive tackle. And, talking with Antonio Coleman, his high school coach, who you've known a really long time, the thing that's interesting there is he's only played football a couple of years. And it feels like that's kind of been a trend at Auburn in terms of getting some really, really high ceiling guys like Bryce Kane. There's some other ones that I'm really losing my mind on right now, but that's been a trend. Favor Edwin, that's been a trend a little bit. And, Cardae Smith is exactly what you're looking for in terms of an offensive tackle frame, probably a right tackle, could maybe even slide inside to guard if you needed to, but a quality pickup as Auburn continues to stack talent along the offensive line.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you look at the first thing that you look at Cardae is just size, and you look at him, and that's exactly, if you drew up an offensive tackle for a college strength and conditioning coach and said, hey, this is what you want a guy to look like. That's it. Because you look at him, he looks like a small forward. But he weighs 285 probably right now. You know, and we're talking to his mom and his grandmother and some other folks, and they're like, you know, probably get to 300, 305. I said, oh, he'll probably get to 315 before he's over with. I mean, he's got easily the frame to carry that. And so athletic, he's got a mean streak to him, good student. And so just continuing the trend of stacking on the offensive line. That's what you've got to do. It's what wasn't done for so long for Auburn football. And just continues that trend for Hugh Freeze, Jake Thornton, and what they want to do on the offensive line.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting combo that you have in terms of the four commitments that you have along the offensive line right now. Spencer Doland was your first. He's the in-state guy, probably a tackle, could maybe slide inside as well. From there, you got Tavares Dice. My order might be mixed up a little bit here on Tavares Dice and Ty Buster, but Tavares Dice is a guy that they evaluated when he was unranked. He was a guy that we actually sent off to the rankings team like, might need to take a look at this guy. Auburn seems to really like this guy quite a bit. Sure enough, now after a strong junior season, after a really strong Under Armour camp in February, he's a top 247 guy, almost a top 150 guy in the country. Auburn feels like they might have another one of those in Ty Buster, the interior offensive lineman they have committed from North Carolina. That's a guy that they found really early, seemed to really like. And then now the latest one in Cardae Smith, another guy who was unranked, just coming onto the recruiting scene last summer. Auburn found him pretty early, offered him, and now he's a top 247 guy. You know, whether or not he stays there, you know, rankings will change, whatnot. But he's a guy that I think is solidly a four-star if he's not a top 247 guy. So it's an interesting mix of guys that a lot of them they found early on and feel pretty good about. And they're definitely not done. You know, we wrote about that. They've got four commitments. I think they could add two, even three more. I think they could look to as many as seven if, you know, the right pieces. You know, if Josh Petty says, hey, I'm in, you're not going to say no. If Andrew Babalola says, hey, I'm in, you're not going to say no. There's a bunch of those guys that they're really in it with, and there's still a long way to go. So I think they're going to stack a lot of offensive line talent this class, and it'll be interesting to see how it stacks up.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're right. I think that's exactly what you do. And I think it's, you know, you start looking at this roster now and you think about, you know, the possibilities of, okay, Dylan Wade going to be gone. Probably Jeremiah Wright, if he's a guy that does what we think he's going to do at right guard, probably be gone. Too Tall Miller, probably gone. And chances are you probably lose somebody in the portal between now and then, just with the numbers on the offensive line. You're probably a chance that'll happen, one of these guys. And so you start to think about replacing how many you want to get to a certain number, all that stuff. And I think they're well on the way to having a full complement of offensive linemen in 2025. And beginning to not rebuild, but reload. And I think that's the goal for an offensive line.
Relayer almost is what I would say, because you've already got a second layer that you feel pretty good about. Seth Wilfred, Tyler Johnson, Favor Edwin is a guy they feel really, really good about in terms of future projection.
Yeah, development of guys like E.J. Harris and Braden Joyner.
Dylan Senda, a bunch of guys.
Correct. I mean, yes, this is an offensive line group that is much, much better off than it has been in a long time.
Yep, and so now this 2025 class is building the layer below them a little bit in a sense. So another good pickup, a lot more there in terms of the offensive line. So the week started well for Auburn, did not necessarily end quite as well. Again, I would stress that it is April, and getting too high and too low in recruiting is not a good idea around this time of the year. There is a long way to go for sure. I believe it was Thursday, Alvin Henderson committed to Penn State. A bit of a shocker, but over the couple of days leading up into his announcement, it seemed like Penn State was taking the momentum. He had planned to commit on April 5th, the Friday before A-Day. The plan at that point was to commit to Auburn. He ends up pushing that commitment back, which he did say when he set that commitment date. He said, hey, this is kind of tentative. The plan right now is, you know, commit April 5th, but Penn State really wants me to get out there and visit. So if I'm able to do that, then I'll probably push things back. Sure enough, he goes out to Penn State for his first ever visit. He ends up committing there. A setback along the running back board, but you can always go out and find running backs. And the thing with Alvin Henderson is he's a couple hours away. He's been on campus a bunch. He will still be on campus. In his commitment story, he was telling 24/7 Sports' Tom Loy that he's already working on scheduling his official visit to Auburn for the Oklahoma game. So he will likely be back then. He will probably be back before then. Auburn wants to take two running backs this class, and so there's a chance that, you know, he could still end up being one of those guys. I never ended up changing my pick because I still think that he probably will end up being one of those guys. But we'll see what happens there. And then, Jason, the other one on Sunday was Husan Longstreet. Auburn battled like crazy to get in the ball game for him, the quarterback from California, number 28 player in the country, number 5 quarterback. Even got him in for an official visit for A-Day weekend, which going into that weekend, I didn't even know official visits could happen this early in the cycle, but they can. So Auburn pulled all the strings, did everything they kind of could, but in the end, his best relationship was with Colin Klein, the offensive coordinator there at Texas A&M, and you know, that ends up winning out. It was a down-to-the-wire battle, though, as of 1 o'clock and on Sunday, and he was committing at 4 o'clock. He still hadn't made up his mind. So Auburn made it very interesting. And now that one is done, and now you really turn a lot of attention to the likes of Juju Lewis and KJ Lacy.
I agree. Yeah, I think that's exactly where it turns. Two guys closer to home, two guys that have, I think, more of a relationship and probably have more of an impact on the other guys you're recruiting than Husan Longstreet when you think about the connections with some of these guys. Obviously, Juju Lewis is one of the top quarterbacks in the country, has been on campus a few times. Has scheduled an official visit to be back at Auburn this summer. And so that's when you look at it and go, hey, see what happened. That would be an impact commitment for sure if it were to be made. And going back to Alvin Henderson a little bit, I agree completely. This one feels a lot like when Keldrick Fault was committed to Florida State. Obviously, much different scenario when you had a change in, staff, coaching staffs, all those things. But to me, it's always felt like that he was going to wind up at Auburn. I said, and we've talked about it before, I did not feel like even if he committed, whoever he committed to, that it was going to be the last one. I just feel like there's going to be another one for Alvin Henderson before long, and I think it's going to wind up being Auburn. If it's not, that is a position, much like when you think about the NFL. That's a position even in college where you can go find guys that fit the bill, fill the void. And obviously, with Jeremiah Cobb on campus, that's a guy that they feel really good about already. And so he's going to be a guy that I think they want to build around for the future anyway. So a good there. But, yeah, I think you're right on the money with those two quarterbacks. I think that's where you start at, and not necessarily start at. Auburn's been with Juju Lewis and KJ Lacy for a long time already.
Yeah, so that's about it in terms of high school recruiting. There's been a couple visitors here and there, and there will continue to be some more visitors. But Nathan now kind of moving into the transfer portal. That's where a lot of the attention is going to be focused in terms of guys going out, as in Auburn losing guys, guys coming in. We already know of a visit. Phillip, I believe his last name is Bleedy, from Indiana, the defensive lineman who started his career at Texas Tech. He will be on campus Monday for an official visit, leaving on Wednesday. The portal opens on Tuesday. He is a graduate transfer. He entered the portal in March. So he's already kind of rolling through the transfer portal recruiting process. So for clarification there, that's why he's already, able to visit and has already visited some other schools as well. But Nathan, it's no surprise that a defensive lineman is the first known visitor this spring window, because that's something they've talked about ad nauseum really throughout spring practice.
Yeah, Jason and I talked about this on the podcast last week, but Freeze went out and said it after A-Day, so it's no surprise. D-line and receiver are the positions you're going to be looking at most heavily, and D-line feels much more pressing. I mean, the main thing overall is that, and Jason, you and I have talked about this several times when it comes to the offensive line, but like the roster overall, you're in much less of a scramble drill this time around. I mean, this period for that staff last year was insane. The quarterback question mark on top of everything made things kind of crazy, but they still brought in a ton of guys after spring practice. Does not feel the same way this time around. Hugh Freeze said, his quote after A-Day was, "We only have a few roster spots we can fill." We've talked about it before, but it feels like a couple defensive linemen are going to be necessary. You like the guys that you have. Like, it's not necessary. And I mean, it's maybe more talented of a defensive line than you've had in a few years, but that talent is really young. Guys like Malik Blockton, Bobby Travis, they stepped up in the spring. They had nice performances in spring practice, but you can never have too many playmakers along the D-line. And so Bleedy there from Indiana feels like the kind of guy Auburn would need. Another interesting one a couple days ago that we were talking about on the board a little bit. Isaiah Rakes is a name that Auburn fans will remember from like 3 months ago. Deja vu, he's right back in the portal. So he was at USC this spring, then hops right back in the portal. I think, you know, I don't know how much if we've really gotten any feelers on that situation so far and where Auburn may stand, but they seem like they were number two for him in the portal the first time around. And so do they just jump back in? Did Vontrell King-Williams have a good enough relationship with him to where he can kind of jump back in? Because it feels like you just kind of, you know, Jason, I don't know what you think about the numbers they're looking at here, specifically on the D-line, but it feels like you just grab a couple of those kinds of guys, maybe an edge piece to give you some depth, and then you ride it out in terms of the D-line.
Yeah, I think if you're able to add a couple of guys that have experience that are plug and play, I don't think you're going to go find Derrick Brown. I think that's what people are. Hey, it'd be great if you did, but I just don't think you're going to find that guy. That's what you're missing. But if you could find two more pieces to add where you could just rotate guys and not have any drop off and not have, that's kind of what your goal is right now. If you're talking about the interior defensive line, can you find another pass rush piece? I do think if you go, hey, this guy can help us. And you go, I do think it'll be a 1 year guy. Can you find a grad guy, somebody to come in, step in for 1 year and not take away from the young guys, where you still want to develop the Jamonta Waller, you still want to develop, you know, Morris Williams and Joe Phillips, let them have their play, but you want to have an experienced guy in case of, hey, break the glass in case of emergency guy. I think that's what you'd like to find as another edge guy, if you can find that guy.
Well, and I'm just going to add this on Rakes real quick too. When he visited last time, Auburn was without a defensive coordinator, or Ron Roberts was on the way out. I'm not sure the timing there exactly, but Isaiah Rakes went from Texas A&M with DJ Durkin,
correct,
then to USC. So he has a connection there with Durkin, the new defensive line GA assistant, whose name I do not remember off the top of my head. I want to say like Balka or something. I'll find it while you guys are talking. But he also came over from Texas A&M with Durkin. So there's definitely connections there if Auburn chooses to go down that route again.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I didn't even think about that with Durkin, and obviously that Texas A&M D-line was pretty good last year. You know, I think you just need to look at what they did in the first portal window in terms of guys that they are looking at, because they tried to bring in somebody like Tomiwa Durojaye was the West Virginia defensive end, kind of buck pass rusher. He kind of a tweener between those two spots. Auburn brought him in. Obviously, he was a guy that they wanted, didn't end up getting him. And so he turned out to be a guy that was really highly thought of. And so I think when you look at that pass rusher spot, you really, really like what you have with Jalen McLeod. And then we mentioned Jamonte Waller and Amaris Williams. Their talent level is really high as well. But like, do you feel comfortable enough for them being your number two? It just might be another year of you need an Elijah McAllister type guy. Maybe one more year. And I think this has been a frustrating roster spot, this one in particular for Auburn, because it feels like we've had probably about 3 years now of saying, man, the buck spot is really thin. I think this is probably the last stopgap season for them. And then you're gonna have Waller and Amaris Williams probably playing that spot and defensive end. You're gonna have Joe Phillips there as well, whoever else they recruit down the road. And so that would not surprise me if that ends up being a spot, but you'll look for a guy probably like Durojaye the second time around.
Yeah. Personal fan of Brett Kolka.
Kolka. Okay. I was close.
You were pretty close. That's it. Yeah. Came from Texas A&M, and you're right. So that's a massive connection on a couple of fronts for Rakes. We'll see if that becomes a guy. He would be more of a maybe impact guy than you might normally find in the portal if that was the guy.
Well, when Matt Zenitz of 24/7 Sports tweeted out, you know, that he was entering the portal, and he tweeted out a picture of him in a USC jersey practicing, he looked huge.
Yeah.
Jason, we were out in San Antonio when he visited, and Nathan talked to him, but he looked huge. I mean, that's what you need in terms of needing a true interior guy.
Yeah, he's very big. And that adds, I mean, you got Trill Carter that first window, but a couple different, I would say Trill Carter is capable of also playing three tech. And so Rakes just adds SEC experience and size. Again, we don't know how much Auburn is going to be in play here. The one to watch out for is Philip Bleedy, as you listen to this, most likely on Monday, he'll be on his visit. And so Christian and Jason will have whatever information we can get from how that went there. Wide receiver is another position we mentioned that we're likely going to see Auburn poke around. Jason, you and I have talked about it. This one is not so much create a board, figure out a couple guys you want for a couple different positions. This one is if you feel like you find a guy you like. But you know who there's just right now, there is not a ton of experience or talent in the transfer portal at receiver from that first window.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see who enters right now. Because right now, the top-rated uncommitted transfer receiver in the portal is Javarius Johnson.
Yeah.
And so that is a position I think we'll get a lot more of an idea over the next few days when the portal opens of like, okay, here are the types of guys available. Here are the kind of guys that Auburn may go after.
And it may depend on if you lose a guy or two off your roster and you go from a number standpoint, let's go find somebody. If you don't lose anybody, then you say, hey, right fit. I keep coming back to something that we've learned a little bit after last year and talking to Hugh Freeze a little bit and kind of just poking around a little bit. I don't think it's going to be small school guy. I don't think it's going to be a guy that is young guy that hasn't produced yet kind of guy. I think if you find a guy right now, wide receiver, it's going to be a guy that's done it at elite level at a big time school and has gone out and produced already, because we saw last year trying to make a jump without spring practice was really, really hard for everybody involved. It was hard for Peyton Thorne. He played as much football as anybody in the country. It was almost impossible for Shane Hooks and Nick Martner. Martner was there some in the spring, but you know, those guys just they could not make that step quick enough to produce. I think you find somebody that has done it and knows what it's like in the Southeastern Conference to prepare. I think that's to me feels like, okay, that's the one guy. If you can find a guy like that, then go get him, bring him in, let him come in and give you more experience. But I think it had to be the right guy.
Yeah, and as for the other spots, I think that is going to depend. Like Jason said, it may be a little bit less of a immediate contributor type situation. I think you may have already at every other position, you may have already gotten those guys that you needed. Excuse me. It might be based on numbers, sort of shoring things up. Dylan Sendung was kind of an example of that last year on the offensive line, sort of just adding a retroactive guy to the freshman class. We'll see what happens. We'll see. I think you could see some, like Jason said, you could see some movement at wide receiver. Might not be super surprised there. You know, the really highly stocked rooms, both lines of scrimmage, linebacker, the secondary has a lot of players. I pretty much just named every spot on the roster, but, you know, we're in the era now where it's not going to be surprising for Auburn to lose a couple guys after the portal. You just obviously want to offset the damage as much as possible and hope it's too big.
It's kind of the expectation where you say, like, hey, would you be surprised? No, I might be surprised with certain people. But I'm not going to be surprised if there's movement off of the current roster. That's, you're right. That's just the world we live in nowadays. Haven't heard really anybody to this point. And so we'll see, I guess here 24 hours or so. I'm midnight, end of midnight, Monday night into Tuesday, it'll start and see if there's any big name people. I won't be surprised if there are in this world. I won't be surprised if there's a few starters that pop up from other places that test the waters and see what the possibilities are. Normally it happens at quarterback when guys don't win a job, but they feel like they're out of it. Maybe some guys that have been highly recruited players in the past. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, one name I want to talk about real quick, Traquan Fagans, the defensive back from USC, originally signed with Alabama. He signed with Charles Kelly. Played under Charles Kelly for, I believe, a year before he transferred to USC. And then Charles Kelly went off to Colorado. But now he is back in the transfer portal. A name that we have talked about extensively on the recruiting podcast is Anquan Fagans, his little brother, New Boy is his nickname. I think that Auburn would very gladly, you know, they don't necessarily need more in the secondary, but you could justify it with the fact that you're losing JD Rim to the portal. You could kind of say, hey, one for one swap, swap out Rim, get Traquan Fagans, and then really try and boost your chances with Anquan Fagans, who's one of your top targets in the 25 class as well. He's not in the portal yet, but he has said that he plans to enter the portal once it opens up.
Yeah, no, I think there's obviously the Kelly connection with the family is a big deal. Has recruited that family all the way through for years now. And so I think that's one to definitely watch. And you're right, it's not necessarily a position of need for Auburn, but you bring in another guy with some experience that has played some and been around. And so, yeah, and then New Boy is one of your top targets, regardless. At Thompson, played with Caleb Harris last year. Caleb is working on him already. He's known Sylvester Smith for a long time. He's known Antonio Kite for a long time. There are a bunch of connections in this Auburn secondary to that family. I think that's something that's, you know, bears watching as well.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it would be. I think that's one of those moves that people are already kind of sitting on right now and seeing how it goes. Things that just make sense for Auburn to at the very least have interest in, kind of like the Rake situation. It's like, okay, there's so many arrows pointing the right way for Auburn. Yeah, we'll have to see what happens over the next few days. I do wonder if, I think we've kind of seen it the past couple years. I mean, we're sitting here talking about how difficult it is to be a post-spring transfer. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but at least this year, it seemed like so much of the talent was heavily focused on that first window. I do wonder if moving forward, you're going to see less movement in this second window from bigger names in the portal. So I'll be interested to see, you know, if really there ends up being a lot of big names that come out of this one. Obviously, you're going to have a few every single year. Every year there's a couple surprises and you kind of raise your eyebrows and you're like, I'd probably like to learn more about what that situation is. But
I think it's big name, not necessarily productive big names. That makes sense. I think it's names that people know from recruiting, not necessarily names that people know from what they did last season in college. I think that's probably more of what you'll see moving forward.
Yeah, I agree.
No, I'd agree with that. And then it's also kind of, I mean, getting lucky in a sense. Like Jalen McLeod was really lucky for Auburn last year. If you didn't get Jalen McLeod and if he didn't turn out to be what he was, even working through an injury after coming in after the spring, I mean, that was one of your best portal pickups. And you know, that's a guy that good eval, good pickup for Auburn, but you kind of just have to get lucky with some of those guys a little bit.
Speaking of good eval, Christian, if you're comfortable shifting gears here from football, if you had anything else you wanted to touch on. Speaking of transfer portal, backcourt pickups for both the men's and women's basketball team at Auburn over the last few days. We will start with the first transfer pickup for men's basketball. Bruce Pearl's team gets JP Pegues from Furman. He was a guy that pretty quickly became Auburn's top target there at point guard. It's a full reset for the Tigers at point guard. You had Trey Donaldson enter the portal, and then Aiden Holloway followed up not long after him. And so it was, you know, good production for the most part from those two in terms of a balancing act. Like, it's difficult to do the 50-50 thing, especially with a couple young point guards who are going to want their role.
But Auburn, you needed so much more out of them.
Yes.
At the end of the day.
Yes. And so I think, you know, both of those guys probably sought out situations where they're going to be, you know, in bigger roles moving forward. It was just a little bit, I think, awkward with how that situation ended up playing out down the stretch of the season, because you never felt like you were getting 100% out of both because you were playing them at about 50-50. And so it felt like as the offseason, the early stage of the offseason kind of churned, that was the direction we were heading, with at least one of them entering the portal, ended up both of them going. And so you get a full reset here. Jason, you talked to JP Pegues. This is a just veteran floor general guy that Auburn thinks can run this system really, really well. Really good scorer, really good facilitator. Guy who can do a lot of things really well, and he kind of takes that pressure. You know, if Tahad Pettiford is a point guard for you next year, if he does play that point guard spot, even just splitting time in the backcourt, this takes the pressure off of a freshman to bring in one year of eligibility senior who comes in and can kind of be a floor general for you.
Yeah, I think that's the key when you think about JP Pegues. Just talking to him after I went back and watched probably, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes worth of clips of games and some things from him. And I brought it up in a story, and I asked him about it. I said, look, the thing that people talked about when they watched UConn was that team was never sped up. Like, you could not speed UConn up. You couldn't do it. You watch JP Pegues, and it's kind of the same thing. He plays at his pace. He can play fast. He can slow it down. But the other team doesn't cause that to happen. I think that's what you want as a point guard, to go, hey, look, here's what we're doing. Just do this. And you don't have to worry about a guy. He said, look, if I play out of control, then how can I expect my teammates to not do the same thing? And I think that's huge. I think when you think about this team, when you think about the pieces that we already know are returning, you think about Denver Jones, and you think about Chad Baker-Mazzara, think about Dylan Cardwell, you think about two shooters, big man, Jani Broom, and as it stands, it still feels like that I would lean towards him coming back to Auburn at this point.
Yep.
Probably get Chris Moore back. We'll see what happens with that. You'd have another piece there. You start thinking about that, and then you go Tahad Pettiford, Ja'Kai Howard, and you got some firepower to go around a point guard that I think is going to be back to a 30-minute point guard guy instead of what we've seen the last couple of years. And you're right, then you're able to, okay, all right, Tahad Pettiford, you want to be a lot of two, some one, then do 8 to 10 minutes of one, and then do 10 to 15 minutes at two, and you're able to split some of that time. I think that's an ideal setup to you think about moving forward for this, and, you know, allow him to ease into it, settle in. I think fantastic pickup. I really do. He's not a guy that plays above the rim, but likes to get to the rim and likes to get to the free throw line. Good shooter. I think everything you're looking for in a point guard.
Yeah, Bruce Pearl said it in the signing that he talked to a bunch of coaches in the Southern Conference. Pegues was first team all Southern Conference, said he was probably the best player. A lot of coaches told him that in the league. We'll have if you're listening to this on Monday, I'll have like a video breakdown, quick kind of story on some of the things I noticed from him going back and watching some tape. This pickup puts you in a healthy position, I think, on the roster to where right now, again, we've got no answer from Jani Broom at the moment. If he ends up leaving, that obviously changes the calculus a good bit. Then you go full steam ahead on a big man. But I don't think you're necessarily pressing anymore to get, and it just depends on who's available, but you have Chaney Johnson at that four spot. You don't need a superstar power forward. You need someone who you feel like can complement. We talked about it, Jason, you and I have talked about it a little bit. You probably need another guard, but you can do a lot. You could do a lot worse than Pegues, Denver Jones, Pettiford playing a little bit of one and two, and then one more guy to kind of fill in that gap there. You can do a lot worse than that in terms of a backcourt. And so this was kind of a good setup for the rest of the roster right now, because I don't really think you're pressing at any one spot at the moment moving forward, because you have a guy who kind of fills that, like you said, a true sort of starting point guard role, to where it gives you some more flexibility other spots.
Yeah, and you mentioned Chaney. I should have mentioned him. Excuse me. But you start thinking about, if you're able to get Broom back, can you play him and do the same thing? Play him some at the four, some at the five. And all of a sudden you start to think about maybe having 8-man rotation instead of 10, where you're kind of sharing the load a little bit, sharing some minutes and keeping those players on the court. I think it's something to look at.
Yeah, and so, yeah, it doesn't have to be a 10-man rotation for Auburn every single season, 10, 11-man rotation. Like, it just depends on the roster makeup. And so that's why I said, looking at the backcourt situation, you've got three guards you feel pretty good about at the moment. You probably need to – you and I were talking about this last week, Jason. Like, you just get a guard you feel like is a good fit right now because of the flexibility that Pettiford had. Heck, Denver Jones played some point guard last season, and so you have flexibility. You kind of just pluck, because Katie Johnson has also entered the portal, so you have three guards leaving. You need to bring in somebody else.
You just need another number to make sure, in case something,
this is
another one of those break the glass situations.
Exactly.
Somebody in that you feel like can play maybe both spots in case you're needed, to give you a little flexibility.
Yeah, and you never know. I mean, maybe they'll go out and get another big splash in the backcourt. It honestly just depends on who's available. And I think this week, we already know about Dylan Cardwell coming back. This week feels right about somebody like Jani Broom. We'll see. I would agree with Jason that I just think the longer this goes on, better it is for Auburn. And I do think Auburn is moving in the right direction in terms of making this a massive priority. After the season Broom had, just really from an NIL perspective, everything, making him the focal point of this team. But again, if he decides to leave, that changes everything, and you go full steam ahead in the portal. And your pitch to a portal center is better than any program of the last few years. Say, hey, come in here and be an All-American like the last two transfer centers were. So yeah. I wouldn't expect them to have much of an issue with that.
Yes, especially I think it's the same pitch, whether it's Broom coming back or a portal big man coming in, that you say, hey, look, we need to find somebody that can give us minutes at the five, but can also – give us minutes at the four. I think that's a selling point to Broom right now. Going, look, we want to play you guys together some. That's your position in professional basketball. You're not going to be a back to the basket five at 6'10", 6'11" nowadays. You're going to have to face the basket. And he's done more of that last year. I think he handles the ball well enough, transition a little bit more. And I think that, again, I think the more options you give yourself with those flexibility of playing multiple positions, the better you are. Whether all of a sudden, if it happens, you think about Dylan as a straight five, Broom as a five and a four, Chaney as a four, maybe 4/3 at times, gives you a big lineup potentially. There's things you can do. And hey, I do agree, though. I think the longer it goes on, the more it feels like that Broom will return, because I think if you're Auburn, and he's and hey, if you're not coming back, then you got to know, so you can start to sell that in this transfer portal world, because you got to get the next guy in. And so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, even somebody like a Jakai Howard is going to come in and be kind of an undersized, slender three-man. And so can he play some two if the lineup needs to? He's probably like an NBA two, but
yeah.
He's going to be a three moving forward, but we'll see how much kind of bulking up he has to do. And so we'll see. Like I said, I think the next few days feel sort of imminent for what this roster is going to be, and then we'll find out what they need to do, the coach staff needs to do moving forward. On the women's basketball side, waking up here on Sunday morning, this was an absolutely massive pickup for Johnny Harris's team. You lose a first team all SEC selection in Honesty Scott Grayson, who was in an all-star game last week and absolutely just pouring the buckets in. And so, she was easily one of the best offensive players, not only in the SEC, but in the country. And to go out and replace her, they pick up
a better offensive player. I think a better,
yes. All the accolades in the world for Talia Scott, former five-star, McDonald's All-American, Gatorade Player of the Year in Florida. She spent 1 year at Arkansas, 21.2 points per game with the Razorbacks. Jason, I don't know how much you looked into it. I don't personally know the specifics of the reason for leaving, but she was at the portal, and Auburn was able to get her. And this is talent-wise, this feels like one of the best players that has been at Auburn in recent years for women's basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you start to think about historically Auburn basketball and DeWanna Bonner and that group, there are some talented players. And, Unique Thompson was a talented player in terms of accolades coming out of high school. You got to go back a ways. I'm talking about a ways to start thinking about somebody with the high school accolades that Talia Scott brings to the table. You start to think about, what she's accomplished in high school and the things she did. And then to go out in the Southeastern Conference as a true freshman and average, 21, 22 points a game, 83.8% from the free throw line, double figures in 19 of 20 games. No, yeah. In her one game against Auburn, they beat Auburn 74-72. The 33 points, 6 of 12 from 3, 11 of 23 from the floor. Somebody puts a 33 spot on you, you probably put a highlight beside that one and say, well, we need to make sure we keep an eye on that girl. It paid off for Auburn. You're bringing in somebody that automatically, when you think about it, and she's not a set three-point shooter. She can shoot. When you shoot 83% of the free throw line, she's going to be a better three-point shooter. She wasn't as good last year, but she gets to the free throw line, which means she is downhill in a hurry. That's the style of play they want to play. And so I think this is somebody that changes the narrative. When you think about Auburn women's basketball, they changed it this year. I think now you change it even more next year because you have some pieces coming back, and they're not done. There's still a couple of portal pieces out there, junior college, that they're recruiting. This is a roster that could have a lot more firepower heading into next season.
Yeah, and like the thing with Talia Scott too is a lot of the times you see, former five-star, former McDonald's All-American enters the transfer portal after 1 year, and it's like, okay, well, they averaged 4 points at their previous school or whatever. Yeah. They didn't really live up to the billing, and they're looking for a new home. And not to throw shade at all, but like Aiden Holloway, former five-star, former McDonald's All-American, who didn't necessarily live up to that billing, at least what people thought, at least quite yet. Now players can obviously continue to develop, but with Talia Scott, former five-star, former McDonald's All-American, who absolutely lived up to the billing, and you're plugging that into your roster right away.
Yeah, the trajectory right now, like Jason said, you sort of change the idea of what Auburn women's basketball looks like at the moment. You start by a steady 3-year ascension under Johnny Harris. And we've talked about it on this show before that just kind of the most perfect example of just sort of building block after building block, getting better if you're watching the games and also getting better just by the numbers ends up. They obviously end up getting to the NCAA tournament for the first time in a while. And now you wonder if they can't get that roster talent to be even better. We knew Johnny Harris was a good recruiter. So this is a really, really big step for them moving forward. When you brought up her performance against Auburn last season, it reminded me of JP Pegues, actually. Auburn had that private scrimmage against Furman last preseason. We don't get a bunch of information about that. We actually don't really get any information because if the two schools decide to make it completely private, then you're not allowed to share anything. We know Auburn won. The rumor the rumbling from that was that JP Pegues had a really big game. 31 was the number I heard. But also that Auburn was just having a really, really tough time staying in front of him. And so again, that's you talk about sort of putting a finger on somebody. When Pegues entered the portal, I'm sure it did not take long for Auburn to remember the kind of performance that he had against them inside Neville Arena. And JP Pegues also, fun fact, has already kind of taken a retroactive visit kind of months previously, because the Furman basketball team actually went to the football game. I forget who Auburn was playing. Might have been New Mexico State, so that might not have been the best game to go to. But I remember seeing that night that, I don't know if Auburn kind of treated them to the ticket. I don't know what happened,
yeah,
but seeing that all the Furman players were at the game in Jordan Harris. So he already got a little bit of a taste of that before this fall.
Yep, Nashville guy, very familiar with Auburn already. And
yep,
obviously point guard tradition, point guard history for Bruce Pearl. This feels like a really good match for this roster. And anxious to see kind of how both these rosters shape up as the basketball portal kind of starts to maybe wind down a little bit as football portal kicks back up into high gear coming up in a couple of days.
Yep, we will see, and we will do our best to bring you guys all the information on both sides, the football and basketball side, over the next month. Is kind of portal season. That's what it's going to feel like. And so, again, auburnundercover.com, we will have everything covered for you guys over there at Neville Arena and at the football facility. So Christian and Jason, I don't know if you guys have anything else you'd like to add here. We are encroaching upon about 45 minutes. So hope everybody enjoyed the show. Like I said, we kind of just wanted to give a bit of a preview to what's going to be a wild next few weeks in the portal and talk a little bit about the additions that the basketball team has had so far. So for Jason Caldwell and Christian Clemente, I'm Nathan King. If you guys enjoyed the show, go leave us a 5-star review. That is the number one thing that helps us out. The bumper music is by Beats by Mordecai. You guys can follow him on Twitter, SoundCloud, and Instagram. And until the next episode, hopefully another one coming your way this week. We'll catch y'all in just a few days. Everybody enjoy the start to your week. We'll talk to y'all soon.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.